This is the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network podcast. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Matt Perrault, Eileen Falkenberg-Hull, and Mike Herzing.
Welcome into another edition of Let's Talk Wheels. I'm Matt Perrault alongside Eileen Falkenberg-Hull and Mike Herzing. We're all back, and Mike and Eileen are in Houston together. You guys are actually seeing each other for this week's edition.
We are alive and in living color.
Yes, living color, and we're rocking here. At least it's hot. But it's not hot here. Don't worry. It's only 99.
Well, it was 103 in Vegas, so I'm not going to cry for you guys.
It's a dry heat, though, for you, isn't it? That's what they always say.
It is a dry heat.
Yeah.
They say that was a dry heat.
It's a very moist heat here in Houston today. So,
yes, it is.
I think we're about even.
Yeah, I would say it's about even, although I think I might be winning just a little bit because humidity is a little bit brutal, especially in September, and we have got college football games going on at 95 degrees.
Those kids make it.
The tailgating experience. I mean, that's where priorities should be. How do you survive your tailgating experience in 100 degrees?
Yeah, always hydrate, as they say. All right, our news and notes segment. We got a lot to come up on the show today. You guys have had a couple of interviews we're going to get to here in just one second. We got our automotive reviews as well, but you know, we are always brought to you by our great friends at Jeep. Without them, this show does not exist. And well, Eileen, we got the new Wrangler special editions coming out here. Ooh. We had the new look Wrangler come out. Mike and I were there in LA when they launched this thing a couple of years ago, and now I think Jeep enthusiasts are going to be pretty psyched about what's coming out in 2020, right?
Oh, absolutely. So for 2020, Jeep is bringing back the Willys. So it's going to be the 2020 Jeep Wrangler Willys edition. And basically, that means that you're going to get a Rubicon Light. Rubicon's their big off-roader.
Sure.
It's really
beast.
Super
That's
capable.
Yep.
Now, this is built on their S Sport model. So it's a lot lower cost than your Rubicon, which can run you upwards of $50,000 and $60,000.
I just drove one was 53.
Yeah, it's a good model, but this one's not. So the Rubicon, Rubicon rails, rock rails and shocks, heavy-duty brakes, 32-inch Firestone mud terrain tires.
Okay.
And it's got, you know, the 2-speed transfer case, all that sort of stuff you get normally on that model. But you also get some exterior stuff that makes it look more rugged. So you get a Willys hood decal, unique black 17-inch aluminum wheels with a gray pad print. And you also get a gloss black sport grille. There's all-weather slush mats inside, LED headlights and fog lights up front. It comes in all 10 colors. In the Jeep lineup, and it comes in at only $33,740 for two-door and $37,240 for four-door.
Wow, that's really not bad at all. You know,
It looks good.
I mean, yeah, that's a lot different than my Willys I have at home from 1946. But you know, this is
rides better too.
It rides better too.
Yeah, so, electric windows, all that jazz.
Yeah, this is a nice Jeep, and especially the Unlimited is the four-door. They're probably gonna be like the other problems they have. They can't build enough.
Yeah, and that's the same here when we go with the black and tan. The Wrangler black and tan is the other one. It's more of a heritage throwback.
Mm-hmm.
So it's available in all the exterior colors, but it has 17-inch machine granite wheels, which are wrapped in all-terrain tires, side steps, low-gloss badging, and it's got that premium soft tan top. Now, what's really cool is the inside, the black paint color on the inside is called Wizard Black, which to me sounds like it's like Harry Potter's Jeep.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't look like that. It looks like it's just like a cool, kind of timeless edition of the Jeep. It has the heritage tan cloth seats, and it also comes with the technology group package. And with that, you get the 7-inch Uconnect system, so that's the infotainment system, the 7-inch driver's display screen, and dual zone climate control standard.
Wow.
Which isn't bad. I mean, that's kind of what you want.
Off and the top off anyway. But
right,
you know,
right. But you still get the screen with all the glare and all of that good stuff.
Oh, I don't know. I'm driving one right now. I'm driving a Gladiator that screen on it. Last week I had a Gladiator that was an Overland with the big screen, and now I'm driving one with the smaller screen. And I think I like this one better. I like this. This one's simpler.
Yeah, it is. If to each their own, absolutely. But this one also comes in at just $32,940 for the two-door and $36,440 for the four-door, which is really not bad edition Jeep. And it's honestly, they're really good looking. I really like the look of them. Jeep's done a great job with the JL.
Yeah.
You know, it's also interesting to see, and this happened for the first time, at least I can remember, over the weekend, where Gladiator ads started running during sporting events. And for one thing, I always loved Jeep ads. They do a great job with their television ads. But, Michael, what's interesting is how they're marketing to the outdoorsmen for the Gladiator, where they're ripping the doors off, they're towing boats, they're on the water. It really feels like Jeep is trying to open up into not just the off-roading enthusiasts, but the outdoorsmen as well.
Yes.
Absolutely, because the Jeep Gladiator is a completely different audience than the average truck audience.
That's right, it sure is. And this is an adventure pickup truck more than anything else. Don't forget, it'll tow 7,600 pounds. Mm. A regular Jeep, I can't even, it will tow half that. But the standard Jeep Unlimited, it's pretty decent. But this is 7,600 pounds. You put 1,600 pounds in the bed. And I'm driving one, and it drives good because it's a longer wheelbase, and it steers better on freeway speeds and things like that. Maneuverability is really good. Probably not off-road because it won't turn quite as sharp because it's a little bit longer wheelbase. But for towing, this thing would be awesome.
I love the Gladiator. I like it so much more than the Wrangler.
Yeah, I
just in terms of ride quality, in terms of just overall, I know they're very similar, but I think the Gladiator, if I was going to spend my money, I'd spend my money on the Gladiator.
Sure, I think it also, when you look underneath it, everything is like beefy and everything else, and you just go, wow, the control arms, all the struts and any of the radius rods, any of the tray sway bars, any of that other track bars, they're all super heavy duty. And I think this is going to be a really nice deal. And, you know, and the fact is, when they did this Willys thing, that's what they're customizing Jeeps. Of course, people are going to grab it and do more to it.
But oh, absolutely.
At least it gives you a start. You know what I mean? Because there are no stock Jeeps.
Right. And then Jeep's keeping the money in-house.
Right.
Which to them is more important. Great. Absolutely.
And it's covered under warranty.
It's covered under warranty. Yes. Mopar parts are covered under warranty. And it doesn't void your contract, which is always important.
Yes, it is.
Very cool. Let's Talk Wheels here as we go through our news and notes segment. Eileen is in Houston for the first time in quite a while alongside Mike. I'm here in Vegas. Yeah, so all of us at different times, but all of us went to Wyoming thanks to GMC for the AT4, the Sierra HD, for the Acadia. We haven't talked about the Acadia yet, but Eileen, let's quickly talk about the Canyon getting the AT4 line.
Oh.
Yeah, so if you were one of the lucky trucks and you used the camera system to peer inside the trailer using that new 15-camera system, you got a glimpse of the first-ever Canyon AT4. And they use first-ever. I just say first because it makes me feel better. It's not as duplicative, but it's still under wraps. But we have an idea of what to expect because we've seen the Chevrolet Colorado ZR2. And the thought process is that the ZR2 and this Canyon AT4 are kind of going to be brother and sister. So obviously, just like the Silverado 1500 and the Sierra 1500, there's going to be some changes, some adjustments in terms of fine-tuning, but probably virtually the same vehicle, but it's probably going to look better than the ZR2. Even though ZR2 is fierce.
I know.
I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what they do with the Canyon, you know?
I'm so partial to GMC. I mean, I love that big, manly, you know, buff front end, although they run the same. But also, don't forget, GMC has some goodies like the special multifunction tailgate, and then they've also got the carbon fiber bed. And I bet you, dollar to donut, they're going to end up in the Canyon at some point.
Right, so we're a few years away from a complete redesign on those. But I do think that this AT4 is a good step in the right direction. Yeah. They're making AT4 throughout the entire GMC lineup. It was inevitable it was coming to Canyon. Now we have a date arriving early 2020, which probably means February, March-ish.
This is a good move for GMC. Mm-hmm. It's really, it's funny how GMC and Chevrolet are so, they're supposed to be cousins and everything else, but they're so different. Even their attitude. This is so much more of a premium brand, and they're really taking that and running with it. And I think they've done an unbelievably good job. Matter of fact, I love the large AT4s. And, of course, there are people that drive the Denalis. They don't even call them GMC Denalis. They just call my Denali.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of the thing, right? So GMC is doing a really good job defining its audience.
Absolutely.
We're seeing them own their audience and to really differentiate that. And when you talk to Tim Herrick, who was the chief engineer, for the 1500, both the Silverado and the Sierra, he'll talk about how they were two different design teams. And while they shared a lot of parts, they were very different design teams. And we're really seeing that set up within GM, where you're seeing underpinnings of the same, kind of the same parts bin for interior parts, but you are seeing the differences between the two brands even more than ever before. Right. And they're both moving, I think, in good directions, generally speaking.
Well, speaking of moving, guys, we both had a chance, all of us had a chance to drive the Acadia. We haven't really been able to talk about it. 2 weeks ago it was embargoed. Last week we ran out of time. So, I mean, Mike, your impressions, you were driving, I was driving, we got into the Acadia. I know what I feel about it, because if my wife drives one, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
Because I think she'll buy it on, you know, the second she gets behind the wheel, it's going to be, we're buying this. So I'm trying to avoid that. But, I mean, your drive impressions for the Acadia, Mike, how'd you like it?
Well, I mean, it's been a while since I drove the Acadia. I've driven the Traverse and some of the Enclave and things like that, which is the cousins. But my gosh, I really enjoyed it. You know, for people that I was thinking maybe I want to get, I'd like the Yukon Denali. I just love it. But the Terrain Denalis, my gosh, it's just about the same size, but it is not body on frame. And if there's a ride's better, it's quieter, it's a little bit less money. This was a very, very, I hate to say surprising, but every time I go to drive a GMC, it surprises me because it's so nice.
Well, the Acadia for me, I mean, the second row captain's chairs were a massive seller. I think having there's not a ton of room with the third row, but if you've got kids and you got a bunch of kids, you're kind of carpooling around or driving to practice or whatnot, it can fit two kids, maybe even three back there, depending on the size of the kid, relatively easily. I mean, it's a heavier vehicle, which my wife loves.
Right.
You know, she wants to feel like she's in something very secure and something very low to the ground that's going to be, you know, weight is evenly distributed.
Sure.
The bells and the whistles,
all the
I felt like
features, man.
Yeah, really, really nice. I loved it. How did you feel about it?
I really liked it more than the Traverse.
Yeah,
and honestly, if I was spending my money, I would go for the Acadia. There's a couple of things I didn't care for, but just trim level stuff, nitpicky stuff. The average customer is probably not going to notice.
You
but
nitpicky?
No. I'm very particular. But no, just some things. But I have to say, I drove the AT4, and I was very impressed with it. I really liked it. And it is a good step in the direction. It's really comfortable.
Yeah.
I think it's really smart. And like I said, I've driven the Traverse. So I actually drove the Traverse, the entire outline of the Michigan Mitten, as part of a program about 2 years ago, and spent a lot of time in it. And got in this Acadia, and I was so much more comfortable immediately. And I just thought, this is better finished. This makes better sense. I would buy the AT4 over the High Country Traverse trim.
Sure.
You know, I just like it. I know where I would spend my money, and it's not that big of a leap to get there.
Yeah, I think that they're going to have, when you get behind the wheel of it, the look of it, the lines of it, the features inside of it, yes, you could really, you know, spice that thing up and get it to be a pretty high price point, but you don't have to get all the bells and whistles and still get a lot of the capability that the new Acadia brings. So I think GMC is going to have a lot of success with that vehicle. All right, a couple of quick hitters. The Porsche Passport to Driving is expanding, Eileen. Tell me a bit about this, because anytime a drive program with Porsche, I'm interested.
No, absolutely, right? So the Porsche has started this drive program where you get to exchange cars in and out and kind of swap them, try and figure out what you want for a flat monthly fee, a minimum $2,100 charge, sometimes $3,100. You get to try out all the different Porsches in the menu. And with that, they started in Atlanta, and people loved it, apparently. They were willing to pay the $3,100 a month, plus taxes,
wow,
fees, and et cetera, et cetera. So now it is expanding to your hometown of Las Vegas, Phoenix, Arizona, where I will be next month, San Diego, where I will also be next month, and Toronto, where my friend Nicole is right now for the Porsche Taycan launch.
Well, I still can't call it Porsche. I still can't do that.
I know. Is that,
try harder.
Is that
I'm 42
difference?
Years old. I can't do it. I've called it Porsche my entire life, but I can't. It drives me crazy. I know it drives people crazy,
right,
and the brand hates it, but I can't do it either.
Guys, is this any different than a subscription program?
It's basically the same thing.
That's it.
That's
okay.
All it is. It's like when
it's
you rent
name.
Clothes. Well, as a man, as a 60-year-old man, Mike, you often rent your clothes from Ann Taylor and Stitch Fix. So you know that that's exactly the same type of program. You try it on for a while, see if you like it. What I think automakers are doing is taking the hit monetarily on these programs, because it does wear out the vehicles quicker. There's resale value there. Taking the hit on the programs cost-wise to hopefully turn those people into more passionate Porsche customers, to get them to upgrade their current models, change over to newer models, all of that sort of thing. If you think about it, $2,100 a month times 12 months, you're spending about $25,000, $26,000, probably about $30,000 with taxes and fees. if you're going to spend $150,000 on a Porsche, spend the $30,000 for a year, try out what you want, and then go and invest and get the one you truly want. You're going to be satisfied off the bat, and you're probably going to be willing to do more bells and whistles. You get to know your dealer a little bit better. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot that goes into it. But yes, absolutely. The same as Stitch Fix for you, Michael, is the same as the Porsche Passport to Drive program.
Awesome. All right, a couple more minutes here before we do our automotive reviews. Whenever I see golf ball in these rundowns, Eileen, I'm curious. Nissan ProPilot golf ball, what?
Yeah, I mean, I threw one out there for you, right? Yep. So we all know on the golf course, getting a hole-in-one is the most desired thing, but getting it there in two or three isn't bad either. With Nissan's ProPilot Assist, they have put that technology into a golf ball, which will keep the ball in the green. Oh. It will get it in the hole. It will keep it, you know, between the trees, just as a vehicle keeps it between the lines on the road.
Right. Wait. Okay, pause for a second. So this golf ball actually will not go off track, is what you're telling me?
It goes in the hole.
It says it goes in the hole no matter where you hit it. Which I would honestly love to have you try out. Because
I want to
take it to Topgolf, take it wherever. I want to see it. But it's really cool. I mean, it's just a kind of a fun thing they did was put all this technology into a golf ball. You know, I have questions about its weight and things like that and how it all works. But it's really, really fascinating, interesting. And honestly, the Nissan's ProPilot technology works pretty darn well. And so I'd love to see it. Now, whether or not it's considered cheating on the golf course is a whole other story.
It just might be.
I don't see Tiger or Phil really buying into this. But I bet if you paid them enough, Tiger they could Mike do a commercial for it.
After the latest surgery, Tiger Mike.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's true. I want to see how that – your weight question is a great one. I want to see what that golf ball weighs. But that is truly something to videotape and watch if we're talking about a golf ball that you can't hit off course. That would be
– Happy Gilmore could use one of these.
Yeah, Adam Sandler would be all over it. There are some videos floating around on YouTube. Nissan has one of theirs on their Nissan Japan channel that you can go ahead and go and click through and watch the ball. And the gentleman is actually – hitting it at a curve, and it does actually go in the hole. So there you have it.
That is quite cool. All right, and finally here on News and Notes, whenever we talk about speed records, it's always interesting. So Bugatti's got the 300-mile-per-hour threshold now. They've been able to cross it.
Yeah, and the Drive.com has a great profile. And it said, your move, Koenigsegg. I mean, 304 miles per hour in the Bugatti Chiron. It is a pre-production prototype. But what they are doing is they are probably looking at making a Chiron Super Sport 300, which of course will be pennies on the dollar for the average customer to purchase, and it will definitely get the 300 every time. But Bugatti has said with this they are prepared to retire the speed challenges. Now, of course, take that for what it's worth, because words are free. But so they did it on Michelin ProPilot Sport Cup 2 tires that were reinforced. Those are Sport Cup 2 tires the average person can buy. Of course, the reinforced ones you probably cannot. The question isn't whether or not Bugatti could do it before. The question is likely whether or not the tires could handle it before. But this one had a body length that was 10 inches longer, reworked aerodynamics. It's a fascinating study in physics, and it's also just a really cool-looking car. I don't want to drive it 300 miles per hour, but I will volunteer you, Matt, to be a passenger should they want to do it.
No, I would drive it probably maybe $150, but I'm not being a pastor. I'm not putting my life in somebody else's hands.
Mike volunteers? You volunteer as tribute? Yeah, he'll do it.
At 300 miles per hour. All right, before we get to our automotive reviews, let's hear from Mike Herzing and Eileen Falkenberg-Hall. A couple of their really fun interviews, first with Laura Adams, then with someone who's going to help you guys out with a trial lawyer and some things happening with accidents. But first, let's hear from Mike and Eileen with Laura Adams.
Hey, guys. We have one of my favorite people. We've got Eileen Falkenberg-Hall and I. We're going to talk to Laura Adams. And she is, like I said, one of my favorite people from driversed.com. And boy, I wish you guys were around when I was a kid. Laura, welcome to Let's Talk Wheels.
Hey there. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Now, everybody's starting back at school. All the kids start back at school, and they're all, if they don't have one now, they need a driver's license. Or some of them need to go back and restudy all the other stuff, too. Can you help them?
Absolutely. So driversed.com is the number one online driving school. So that's what we do. We've got all kinds of courses there geared for drivers of different ages and stages. So whether you're you know, a teenager and you're just starting out, or even an older driver, if you got a traffic ticket and you need to go to traffic school, you know, maybe you want some in-car driving lessons as well as the online lessons. We offer that as well, depending on where you are. So there's a lot of information out there, a lot of great resources. Many kids will have the opportunity to take driver's ed in school, but it's not offered everywhere. You know, unfortunately, It's one of those programs that tends to get cut when budgets get tight. So not every school is going to offer that course. If it is offered, I would encourage students to jump on that and make sure they get that course taken. But if it's not available, don't rely on mom and dad. You know, mom and dad might be great drivers. They may think that they're the best people to teach young drivers. But in a lot of cases, they need a third party. It really does help to have an objective person teach your kid, and in some cases, they are going to, your child is probably going to pay better attention, you know, to a professional instructor, a third party, than they will with mom and dad. And it will definitely, I think, be a lot easier in terms of, you know, stress on the relationship. It can be a little testing at times when parents are trying to teach kids how to drive. So mom and dad definitely need to reinforce the good behavior and the good, all of the good things that they learn. But they may want to turn to a professional when it comes to the nuts and bolts of teaching kids how to drive.
Now, speaking of learning how to drive, I know when I was learning how to drive, I had the unique situation of really living really close to a state border. So I was almost in Pennsylvania and New York almost equally as much. Is the curriculum that driversed.com teaches, does that vary from state to state? Can parents get kind of a nationwide curriculum? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the residence of your driver is going to determine what they need for their curriculum. And it is a little different from state to state. So that's very important. But it does come down to what your address is. So if you are a resident of Texas, you know, even if you drive over into a bordering state from time to time, you're going to take that Texas test and go through the Texas system. And so if you go to driversed.com, what you will see is a drop down there for your state, and you can see everything that's available there. And yeah, so you know, you definitely want to begin preparation as soon as possible. A lot of kids are really ready to drive and you know, they can't wait. You know, there are some kids too that are a little hesitant to drive, and we're also seeing that many kids want to delay it a little bit. They're kind of happy to have mom and dad drive them around, and maybe they also have a lot of contact with friends on social media. So many people will ask me, you know, should I make my kids take the test if they are of age? And that question really comes down to their skill and ability. We don't want to push kids to drive if they're not ready. You know, it may be something that they need a little bit more time to get used to the idea of doing and a little bit more practice. But if kids are ready and, you know, parents are ready and all of the pieces are in place, then I recommend that you begin the process and begin that education. The more you study up, the better you're going to do on your test.
And now as you keep studying up and you keep practicing, every state has a different requirement for how many hours you have to have behind the wheel, how many hours of specific types of instructions. Does driversed.com certify that? Is there documentation that the parents can take into the DMV or submit? How does that all work?
Right. So the courses that we have available are all approved. So everything there is going to be very user-friendly. The curriculum has been approved by that state's Department of Motor Vehicles. So you know that when you take that test, you're going to be covering all of the important information that's needed. And as you mentioned, states are all a little different. Some are going to you know, require that you take a test to for learner's permit. Others are going to also require that you take a course after you get your actual practice driving under your belt. So it's all a little different. But in most states, I'll say that the learner's permit starts at about age 15, maybe age 16. And so at that point, you can't do everything that you can do with a regular driver's license, but you can do a lot as long as you have a licensed adult passenger in the front seat with you. You are typically able to drive at least from dawn until dusk. It might also limit the number of passengers that can be with you. Oftentimes, it's zero passengers besides that adult with you. And it may also set the number of hours that you have to drive before you can actually apply for your full, you know, your full license. So there is a process in place that's meant to kind of gradually get drivers feeling comfortable behind the wheel and giving them the opportunity to practice, but practicing with adult supervision.
So we're talking about getting comfortable behind the wheel, and a lot of teenagers these days have grown up playing video games, and they're into virtual reality. And I know earlier this summer we read a study from Volvo that talked about how parents wish virtual reality and driving situations in terms of VR would be more widely accepted and widely acceptable and available to be used by teenagers as they're learning how to drive. Is that something that DriversEd.com has?
Yeah, so right now that's not something that is a part of the approved curriculum, so it's not there yet. Maybe down the road it will be. I mean, it's a really interesting way to think about learning to drive. You know, most of the curriculum is really focused on understanding the law in your state. You know, what are the rules? And then also getting kids behind the wheel to demonstrate a lot of the basic maneuvers, you know, that we have to do, the parallel parking.
There we go.
But, yes, so all of those basic functions are built into not only the permit test, but that in-car level as well.
Okay, now can you do this on your phone anything yet? Has that happened yet?
Well, some of the tests absolutely can be done online and on your phone. And that's kind of the beauty of taking an online driving course. It's available to you 24/7, and the technology is just, you know, fantastic. So it's going to take you through a variety of types of curriculum. Some of it's video that you're watching. Mm-hmm. You know, some of it is actually multiple choice and selecting answers. So it's quite interactive. You know, I wouldn't say that it's virtual reality, but it's definitely very interactive. And the idea is to keep students engaged. The idea is to really make mm-hmm. them understand what are the real world situations that they may find themselves in.
So as a step parent who has a 15-year-old stepdaughter with a learner's permit, I have to know, are there tips on DriversEd.com to help parents who are teaching their kids how to drive? I mean, I had to think back to how I learned how to parallel park recently, and that was, you know, stretching in the way back machine, and it took a second for me to be able to figure it out. Is that something that you guys have available to us?
Absolutely. There is a wealth of information there, tips for drivers, tips for parents, and all kinds of information that will really help new drivers understand what their challenges are.
Sure.
A lot of information there about distracted driving, the dangers of using your phone, using technology while driving. You know, that's something that's especially important these days. So, yes, I would recommend that anybody who is dealing with a new driver or getting a new licensing situation themselves, take a look at DriversEd.com and see what's there. I think you'd be surprised by the wealth of information and resources there for drivers.
Well, you know, you've got a lot of older drivers that needed just a little, maybe they just, I don't know, for example, my daughter-in-law, she doesn't feel all that confident behind the wheel. She doesn't drive all that much, but she's very smart. But she goes, I sometimes get a little nervous. I don't think she ever had much training. At least it wasn't a good training. She probably went to Bob's, you know, driving school and nail salon or something, you know. Sometimes you just need a little bit more. Do you guys have that?
Absolutely. And Mike, you make a great point. I mean, just because you are licensed and you've been driving for 10 years, it doesn't mean you're a great driver. You know, we all have room to improve. Every time I have taken an online course, I will tell you, I come away with some new ability, some new skill or
sure.
tip that I didn't know before. So it is definitely a nice way to improve your skills. There's also a good benefit when it comes to insurance. Many times,
right.
if you do complete one of these courses, you will qualify for an auto insurance discount. So it's kind of win-win.
Well, you know, also when they're 15 and they have the learner's permit, your insurance doesn't go up yet. Now, once they get the driver's license, at least in Texas, you automatically have to put them on your insurance or something. And even though you tell them, hey, he's not driving, the insurance company didn't go for it. You got to put it on there. So while they have a learner's permit, that's okay. The insurance doesn't go up. People need to remember that one.
That's right. You are absolutely right on that one. And, you know, being prepared for what that insurance premium is going to be, it can be quite expensive, quite a shocker to new parents. But the good news is that as kids get older, that rate should come down. So, you know, when they're 16, it's going to be probably the highest point, especially if it's a boy. You know, rates for young males are some of the highest out there. Brutal. But watch that rate come down. You want to make sure that every birthday he or she has, that you're seeing that rate come down a little bit, and it will level out about the time they're in their mid-20s is really about the time we see those rates kind of, you know, level out, become more reasonable.
Hopefully they won't be on my insurance by then. Actually, I might have already grown up.
So, Laura, one of the questions I have is, when you have multiple languages spoken in your house, and you might have a driver who is new to this country, does DriversEd.com offer tutorials in different languages for those individuals who are just learning how to drive in America?
Yes, DriversEd.com does have multiple languages, definitely Spanish, Chinese is another language that's popular. And so depending on your state, there will be a variety of languages. And that's a great point, because there are many people who are coming here. They're new and they're getting a license as an adult, and, sure, and English may not be their first language. So we want to make sure everybody has the opportunity to be safe no matter what their language is.
Okay, Laura Adams, let DriversEd.com tell us now. We can obviously go to DriversEd.com and find out a wealth of information. And I want to thank you for coming on Let's Talk Wheels, as always.
It's been my pleasure. Appreciate you having me. And everybody be safe out there.
All right. Okay, guys, Eileen and I have got a leading trial attorney from New York there, David Parisman. And David is going to talk about what's going to happen and what should you do when you're going to have a wreck. Because you know what? We all have accidents. I luckily have, knock on wood, haven't ever had one. But people have accidents and you panic. You don't know what to do or who to call. You know what to happen, but this guy here knows everything. He's one of the leading trial attorneys in the country. David, welcome to Let's Talk Wheels.
Thank you. Thank you for calling me.
Yeah, well, there you go. All right. Now, I'll tell you, we were just talking about that. Somebody has an accident, and all across the nation, it's not much different, really. The laws are sometimes different, but the people aren't different. So what should we do when we have an accident? Somebody runs, let's say either you run into somebody or somebody runs into you. I guess it's a different thing you have to do, right?
Yes and no. Whether you run into somebody or somebody runs into you, it doesn't necessarily determine whose fault it is, because somebody could stop short in front of you and you might have run into them, but it was still their stopping short that caused the accident. So that's not really the defining line. The first thing that I tell every client or every time I speak to people about what they should do is assess your medical situation. First things first, take care of yours, your passengers, and the people in the other car's medical situations. If anybody even has a question about needing an ambulance, call one then and there. Do not play around with anything else, because nothing else is more important than your health. So that's the first thing you do.
Okay.
If you get to a point where you've decided you don't need immediate medical care, or someone perhaps has been taken away because of their immediate medical care, mm-hmm, that's when you get into the second part of it, which is trying to document what's going on. And today's day is different than it was many years ago. Everybody's got a smartphone.
Yep.
And because we have smartphones, we can take photographs and videos. So you should take photographs and videos of everything you think you might need. You should take it of the vehicles. You should take it from all the sides of the vehicles, both of them. If there's more than two vehicles, all of them. You should take them close up. You should take them far away. Don't spare it. It's digital. You can keep filming away. If somebody is walking around in another car that you had an accident with, screaming that you hurt me, and you're suspicious that this person is going to try and sue you, take out your phone. Video them if they're walking around, jumping up and down, screaming and yelling and waving their arms around. That may be useful. On the other hand, if you have injuries or any of your passengers have injuries that you think you can document at that moment in time, take photos. after you've taken photos, get information. You want license plates. You want to exchange credentials. You want their insurance information. You want their car registration. And you want to give them yours. You may have already, at that point, depending on whether you think you should, you don't have to, but I guess it's probably the better course, call the police.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and wait. Go ahead.
Say, David, you said that you should assess if people need medical damage, but at what point do you advise people to call 911? Is that right away? Is that, you know, while you're doing it, do you hit the button in the car? At what point would you advise people that that is the moment to dial 911 and start having the police, ambulance, and perhaps a wrecker service be on their way to your accident site?
The safest thing to do is immediately. That's just, but I'm a lawyer, and we talk in extremes. So we want to cover the safest situation is immediately. On the other hand, if it were me, and I'm sitting in my car, and it was a minor fender scrape, and everybody seems okay, and the driver and passengers in the other vehicle don't seem to be making a big deal out of it. No, we're okay, we're going away.
Of course, if you video that, that's even better, right?
Yes. On the other hand, if you don't call the police in that situation, then for all you know, 2 days later, they go meet with a lawyer, and then all of a sudden people are making more of it than they should have. You're going to have wanted to call the police. So I suppose, again, the safest answer is dial 911.
So then you talked about documenting the incident itself. Now, we see a lot of insurance companies on their apps. You can upload all of that directly to the app. Now, is that something you advise them to do, or is that something you advise the people in the crash to hold on to some of that or to wait until their insurance company asks for it? And by the same token, should they be, if they're at an intersection, should they be the ones going and asking for security footage from businesses around that? How would you advise them on that?
Well, I don't know many clients of mine that run around getting security footage from things in the area. They can. It's usually something that happens once we get involved as attorneys, and we send investigators out and get that kind of thing done. As to disclosure to insurance companies, to adversarial insurance companies, the other guys, mm-hmm. insurance companies, I say you don't give them ice in the winter.
I love it.
Because there is generally nothing you're going to provide them with that they're not going to try to hurt you with. But if you make a property damage claim against them, this, and you make the claim directly against them, there may come a point in time that you are going to have to submit photographs to them, statements to them, estimates of damage, and you can and should do so, but you got to be careful because they're insurance companies. They're not your friends. They're businesses. And their purpose is to save money. Once in a while, there are insurance companies out there who will actually look to assess a claim fairly and pay it fairly. But unfortunately, I've experienced too many situations with it the other way. With your own insurance company, you have an obligation to be forthcoming.
Right.
Because it's your insurance company, so you should be.
Absolutely. Now, you're talking about safety and the safety of the people involved. When you're getting out and you're photographing and videographing, it's important for people to remember that they need to also maintain their safety in those situations. Don't go running into traffic and have a secondary accident. Things like that are very, very important. Now, when you call 911, sometimes the 911 operator will tell you, you know, if it is safe to move your vehicle and it's able to be moved, to move it into an adjacent parking lot or off to the side of the road for not only your own safety, but the safety of those motorists around you. How would you advise somebody to approach that type of situation?
I think that's fine. Just take pictures of it first, because very often the positions of the vehicles mm-hmm. and sometimes the debris in the area of those positions can be helpful. I remember particularly a case where there was a crossover incident where another vehicle had crossed over into my client's lane of travel. It was on a two-lane road.
Uh-oh.
And the vehicles had been moved. and photographs were taken actually by the police, and they presented them at trial saying, well, it looked like the accident happened when your client crossed over into the other guy's lane because that's where the pictures seemed to show it. And then I showed the officer pictures that showed the debris from the broken front lights of the vehicles, mm-hmm. and they were all together in a little pile on the other side of the road. So my simple question for that police officer was, unless somebody took a broom out and decided to sweep the debris over to the other side of the road, normally the debris falls where the incident occurs, right? And of course, the officer had the answer, yes. So that debris laying there, and you as an experienced officer would know, is indicative that that's where the incident occurred and that's where the impact occurred. And of course, he said yes, and that was the end of it, and we won.
You're a hero again. Now, David, I have a question.
Yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes, there you go. Sometimes hero, sometimes a goat. Well, sometimes a police officer will come in and they'll look, assess the situation, and they'll say, they'll give somebody a ticket. Okay, and that's great.
No, it's not. Said, well, no one wants
married.
A ticket.
She's married to a police officer. She doesn't get tickets.
No. That is untrue.
Right, at least not.
No,
right
I am here. Married to a police officer. But it doesn't mean I can't get a ticket.
All right. Now, David, I'm saying the police are making a determination. Does that mean it's that you're automatically at fault and it's you're lost and everything? A lot of people just give up.
No, it doesn't mean you give up. It means you're starting off behind the eight ball a little bit. It's always better to have the police report in your favor. It's always better not to get a ticket. But, you know, it's not uncommon that police come to the scene of an accident and they jump to conclusions. Sometimes they'll jump to conclusions because the person who's in the right is noisy, annoying, bothersome to the police, and the police get annoyed with them. And forgive me, I understand you're married to one. And they get annoyed, and that's the person whose side they don't take.
Right.
Because they're bothering them. Or they see something, and they think they got it based upon what they see, and they issue a ticket in that regard. You can try and battle it on your own. I don't claim to be an expert of how things go down in motor vehicle court in Texas. I know how they go in New York City. But the bottom line is you may need to hire a lawyer who specializes in those kind of things. It's not probably a personal injury lawyer. It is probably an attorney who specializes in tickets. That's what they do. They go to court and they handle people who get tickets.
You're talking about hiring an attorney, and it is important to kind of try out and find the right fit for you. And I notice on the Parisman firm's website that you guys offer Polish, Spanish, and English services. Now, is that
we do.
Is that something that if you're a non-native speaker, you should look for a law firm that has a translator or offers services like that so that you can best get your story across? Or what would you advise people?
I would advise that you always be able to communicate with your attorney. And if your attorney doesn't speak your language or doesn't have somebody in their office on a consistent basis who speaks your language, that's a problem. If they have to bring someone in constantly as an interpreter, it's not going to work. It's not going to work because every time you're going to need to speak with your attorney and get on the phone, they're going to have to get an interpreter. And it's going to go back and forth. And that's why we have, for the languages that came to us most often, we have people in the office who speak those languages at any time it's necessary. They're at our beck and call.
Awesome.
You got to be able to communicate with your attorney. And if you think you're going to get along with broken English, broken Spanish, yeah, my recommendation is not, because when it comes to things like that, there's details. We don't want them getting anything wrong.
Okay, now, David, we have listeners nationwide, I think, especially on our podcast and stuff like that. Now, what if somebody's – now, do we need – if they're going to call you, do they have to be in New York?
No, you can call me from all over the country. But if you want to retain me to handle a case,
mm-hmm,
yes.
Gotta
yeah,
be in New York.
We restrict our practice to the city of New York mostly. We do go upstate outside the city, but most of our most of the cases that we handle are inside the city of New York.
All right, David, do you have a website?
I do. It's Parisman.com.
All right. How do you
Which for me is easy because it's my last name, but for everybody else it isn't. It's P-E-R-E-C. You'd think it would be an S, but it's a C. P-E-R-E-C-M-A-N.com.
All right. David, thank you so much for joining Let's Talk Wheels today. It was really fun.
It was. I appreciate the fact that we got in touch and that I had this opportunity. I hope I've given some informative and useful information to your listeners.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, David. Have a great day.
All right. So I was driving a 2019 Toyota Tacoma TRD that I ended up taking off-road with my daughter, which was really a lot of fun. So I'm going to do the review on that on the other side. But, Mike, tell us about the Wrangler. You were driving around. You teased us a little bit already on the show, about it. But what were you driving?
I was driving a 2019 Jeep Wrangler Unlimited Sahara 4x4. It was, of course, all the Wranglers are 4x4, so that's kind of redundant there. But I really liked it. You know, the Sahara is one of their top-selling trim levels, really. It's basically you either buy the kind of stripped-down Jeep or you buy this one that's really loaded with all the same stuff for just a little bit more money. It's a deal. Now, they make two different kind of Wranglers. There's the Wrangler Sport and they're just the Wrangler, basically, and there's the Wrangler Unlimited. Unlimited means it's a four-door.
So it is limited to four doors.
It's unlimited to four doors.
It's unlimited to four doors. That's,
right.
That's the wording
That's
Jeep wants. Well
it.
Done.
It's unlimited to four doors. And, you know, it's really funny because you look at the two-door Jeep, and it's probably a compact SUV. And then the four-door Jeep, is it really a midsize? Because it almost gets up to midsize. It's hard to say, really.
It has a really spacious passenger cabin. Like, you really do feel the space in there, especially with this new JL.
And it's more than just adding two doors. It just seems like a different vehicle. But this thing is also, you know, the Sahara is like top trim level when it comes to luxury. Now, the Rubicon version, they still make it, and it's real popular, and that's the beast. That's the off-road thing. That's got the lift and the big wheels and tires and all this other good stuff, and the rock rails and everything else. That's and actually the heavy Dana axles on the front and that kind of stuff. But this one is, you know, still super, super capable off-road. It's not made for rock climbing as much as the other one.
But it's still extremely capable.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Every Jeep Wrangler is very capable.
Absolutely. Some of the best on the planet. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Only thing I keep up with it closely is probably a Land Rovers, a Range Rovers. But they're a lot more money, too. But this is a lot different than the 1941 Willys Jeep that helped win the war, but not any less capable. Probably won't look good with bullet holes in it, though. But the Wrangler is one of the few vehicles you can pick out at night, okay, by just seeing the headlights. Think about it.
Yeah, I think Wrangler and the new Kia Telluride are kind of right there, right?
That's it. But the Wrangler has always been that way. But really, the Unlimited Sahara, which is really popular, 4x4 has got a base price of $38,395. Mine, however, was loaded with extras like heated leather, trim seats, premium instrument panel, the upgraded 8.4-inch Uconnect infotainment system. And this week I'm driving one with a smaller infotainment system. And, I almost like the smaller one better in a way. But this one was handy. It has GPS, got an Alpine audio system, rear park assist, forward collision monitor, blind spot monitor, adaptive cruise control, LED lights, 8-speed automatic transmission, 270 horsepower, 2.4-liter, 4-cylinder. And it ran great. I was like, oh, has also a 22 horsepower or 71 pound-feet of torque hybrid assist. This is a hybrid four-cylinder. I was like, you know, skeptical of it. But after driving it and driving the V6 the next week, I like the four-cylinder better.
So that's the e-assist. That's the same thing you see in the Ram 1500 and with the diesel that you drove a few weeks ago, right?
Right. And this thing really runs good. And fuel economy. Jeep's always been famous for really having brutally bad fuel economy. On the V6, I was getting 22, okay? And on this one, I was getting 27, okay? Mm. I got 27 pretty easily, just driving on flat road. I was surprised. Now, it's rated at 22 combined and 24 on the highway, but you can beat that really easy. But it's got keyless entry, the Sky One Touch Power Top. Now, that thing is basically, it's real. It's right in between the roll bars. It goes all the way. You push the button, and it goes opens up all the way to the back. And that is an awesome thing. It is so cool. It's like having literally the top off of the vehicle. Of course, I don't know if it's worth the extra $3,995 for the top. I don't know. The whole thing loaded up with every destination charge and the whole bit was $54,540. And I said, I'm not sure if the power top is like. If you haven't driven a Wrangler in a few years, you're going to be in a surprise. The Jeeps work tirelessly on improving the Wrangler's on-road manners without sacrificing any of the off-road capability. Interior is good quality, very comfortable, even on a trip. It's waterproof, not just water-resistant like it used to be. Now it's waterproof. They put a sprayer in there for 24 hours to test it. Fuel economy, like I said, is great. I mean, it was awesome. I think $54,000, if you're going to just use it as a toy, it might be a little much. You might want to get the standard thing, like we talked about the Rubicon for $32.
Or you can even get a Gladiator for $32.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some really good pricing.
That, but they're a great vehicle. But you know, this thing is comfortable. And it's one thing about, especially Matt, you live up on the East Coast for all many years, that if you have a Jeep, you know you're always going to get home.
Oh, yeah. And the two-finger wave is going to, or the one-finger wave is going to be seen probably like every 2 miles.
That's a different one-finger wave than other people do in Boston.
I know, but you know, also,
New York.
Don't forget, the trail-rated Wranglers can go in over you know, almost 3 feet of water. And it's got the unbelievable four-wheel drive system, tow hooks, locking differentials. But just driving it is like a whole adventure. Everybody loves them. They made the big change to the Wrangler, the JL model, last year. And, you know, when you have a Jeep, it's kind of the charisma. You kind of forget about the rough ride and forget about it a little bit noisier than other vehicles. And you forget about it's a little expensive because you just fall in love with it. Mm. And even having it for a week, it's just part of the Jeep family. It might be a dysfunctional family, but it's family. And, you know, everybody waves and the whole bit. And it's really neat to drive a Jeep again. And I really enjoy it. It had been a while since I've driven that thing, you know, without driving mine, my old 46. But still, I was really happy. Anybody looking for a compact or SUV or a mid-size SUV, think about also, it's a little bit more money, but the residual value of that sucker is crazy.
The resale value is tremendous it's on Wranglers and Gladiators.
Like you try to buy a used one, it's better off. That's one of the few vehicles, that and a Tacoma, the only two vehicles you're better off buying new than used because they don't drop any price. So check out the Wrangler Unlimited Sahara 4x4.
Very cool. Before I talk about the Tacoma that I had this week, Eileen, you had kind of the opposite end. Mike and I had the four-wheel drive off-roading Nissan Leaf Plus. I like this vehicle a lot when I had it. What did you think of it?
So this is actually my second time in the Leaf Plus. I drove it initially out at its launch out in California, in Encinitas, California, and I haven't had it at home for an extended period of time. So this was kind of my opportunity to live in it. And I have driven the Leaf. I was out at the launch of that. So I've had quite a bit of time in this Leaf. I'm very glad that Nissan went ahead and put the 215-mile range on the vehicle. I had as much as 233 miles of range when I had it plugged in before I turned the air conditioning all the way up because it was summer in Atlanta. But, you know, it does have a lot of other things to it. So it's got 214 horsepower, 250 pound-feet of torque. It has a 100-kilowatt quick-charging battery system in it. You know, it's not speedy. It's not, you know, it's not Tesla. You're not putting it in a ludicrous mode. You're not going to get that at all. But for everyday driving, I found that the Nissan Leaf Plus was an excellent daily driver from a driver and front passenger perspective. It's a great little commuter car. It makes a lot of sense.
But it doesn't look weird either.
No, it looks like
a regular car.
Thank goodness.
Yes,
it's not buggy or weird or, you know, I always say like the Chevrolet Bolt reminds me of like a Playmobil thing. This doesn't do that. This looks like a car. Yeah. So this looks like that. And I really give kudos to the to the Nissan design team for that. I really like the e-pedal, which allows for one pedal driving. So you use that. You use a brake for most driving situations, but for the e-pedal, you can determine exactly how much throttle you want to open up. And then when you take your foot off the throttle or lessen your input on the throttle, it allows for you to then have a slowdown, that regenerative braking. And that does help. I really like that on rural road driving. I don't recommend it in city driving, but I really like the e-pedal. I think that's a future thing. I would love to see all cars have it, but I really enjoyed that. The biggest problem I have with the Nissan Leaf Plus is the fact that my stepdaughters did not fit in the back. They are about 13 and 15, and one's 5'6 and one's 5'8, and the one who is 5'8 had her head on the roof. And I have sat back there for a decent period of time, about 2 hours, and it is stadium seating. It is my butt was very uncomfortable, and my head, I'm 5'6 and a half, that almost touched the roof as well. So it's not meant for people who have tall children, teenagers who are growing, anything like that. I would recommend, if you're on the shorter side and your kids are going to be on the shorter side, that's fine.
Or you could stunt their growth somehow.
Well, yeah, or you could stunt their growth, or, you know, ask for leg donations, that sort of thing. But I don't recommend it for that reason if you have the family. Now, if you're intending on using the Leaf as a grocery getter, as something that you're commuting in, Nissan Leaf Plus, yeah, short trips like that, you know, if your kids aren't that tall, absolutely. It's a great value in that respect. But if you're looking for something for taller, I would have to recommend going to a different EV for that. But like I said, I like where it starts. It starts mid-30s. It goes up, you know, 10 to 15,000 from there, depending on how you equip it. I really like the Nissan Leaf Plus. I think they've done a pretty decent job with it. There's some things I'd change, but like every EV, you can see the hard plastics. You can see where they lightweighted it to try and get more range out of it. Because that battery is so heavy, they have to do those things. But it makes sense, you know, like I said, as a daily driver or as a commuting car. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, guys. And finally, I was driving a 2019 Toyota Tacoma TRD Pro. This was a fun ride. 4x4 double cab. It comes in with a sticker price of $45,000, but this thing really is fun to take off-road. If you guys go to letstalkwheels.com, if you guys go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/letstalkwheels, or Instagram, we are Let's Talk Wheels, SBN is our handle. You'll see a bunch of fun pictures. I had the privilege of taking my daughter out off-roading with this thing, and boy, oh boy, this is where the TRD Pro really flexes its muscles. We're talking about the front grille, which is really big. All the graphics all over this vehicle. You've got the 2.5 internal bypass shocks with rear remote reservoirs that really did a great job getting over some really big rocks. You've got your front skid plate, your TRD front skid plate, and your TRD exhaust really pronounced. You see it very much on the undercarriage of the vehicle. Your 18-inch TRD black alloy tires were awesome, and your TRD Pro shift knob and floor mats all decked out. You know you're driving the TRD Pro when you're in this vehicle. The gas mileage on this is okay, but you're not getting this thing really for gas mileage. 18 to 20, but really this is about the ability to go off-road and the performance of that 3.5-liter V6 engine, which really with 8-speed automatic, your part-time 4x4 system with 2-speed electronically controlled transfer case, which really was nice, your locking rear differential, your multi-terrain selection, which is awesome to be able to know, crawl control, which is really nice. I actually use that a little bit going off-road with my daughter here in Nevada. You've got a lot of really interesting options when it comes to controlling the vehicle, the sense where the vehicle is. The safety sense, your pre-collision detection system, which is really nice, lane departure. But again, I mean, you got your automatic high beams, your rear backup camera and rear parking sensor, which is nice. The vehicle is pretty large when you're driving around in it. I mean, this thing, you know why the Tacomas sell so well, and you know why the Tacomas really have amazing resale value. Now, this is a vehicle that is, you know, not the most technologically front face forward, but who cares? I mean, this is all about off-roading, all about being able to take this thing off-roading and have a good time with it and really enjoy it. It can get through pretty much anything. This had your snorkel on the top of it for the exhaust, which is on the upside. So if you have to go through water, you can go through water. And I didn't test it out. I'm in the desert, but this thing has the ability to go through, you know, a couple of inches of standing water relatively easily, up to probably a foot and a half or so, and be able to move around pretty easily in it. So, I mean, technologically speaking, yes, again, the interior for a Toyota leaves somewhat to be desired, but for this vehicle, which comes in with a sticker price of just below 51,000, retail price of 48, and then it kind of gets jacked up with some other bells and whistles, the graphic packages, the desert air intake, which is $725 extra if you don't want that. That's your snorkel that's on there, so you're not getting sucking up any of the dirt or the grime or the dust that's all, you know, bopping around when you're going around in the desert. This thing had to be taken off-road. So it was just a requirement. You had to go off-road with this thing, and it was just so much fun to be able to do so. I'm serious. You want a truck? I threw a bunch of stuff in the back of the truck. It's got a nice, really big bed back there, and really has a lot of power to be able to drive that thing around with a V6 engine. You don't even feel it when it's back there. But if you're someone who likes to off-road, if you're looking for something that is extremely capable, something that you can go through pretty much almost anything, really, and plus have the ability for a truck, having the 4x4. I love the desert air intake, which is really cool. The snorkel, which is awesome. All the TRD, different signage and wraps on the vehicle were fun. I could not recommend this thing more. One of the most fun trucks I've had here in Las Vegas that I've been in for 4 years. Incredibly capable, very safe, very fun. Definitely check out the Toyota Tacoma 2019 TRD Pro, the 4x4 double cab, which is really fun. I got it in a really nice white. Highly recommend you check it out. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us here on Let's Talk Wheels. Remember to subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We're always here each and every week. We drop every Saturday. Hopefully, you'll stay with us throughout the fall here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network and the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network podcast.